Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. At the halfway point, 11:30, we're going to be talking to Zafar Bengash about the clashes that are unfolding, unsurprisingly, at Strait of Hormuz and what all the headlines are, whether they're correct or incorrect. But we're going to begin by talking to David Jacobs, a Toronto lawyer who has practiced and before the UN courts, the ad hoc tribunal for Rwanda. And we had David as a guest last week, but we need to bring him back because, as will often happen with a very serious decision to be made, there's been some delay. And I believe that today, June 29, is where, once again, they're saying this will be, a decision will be made. And David, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
So just to reprise one fact, what is that issue here at the moment?
So this is all under the umbrella of what is the United Nations Security Council going to do with this organization which they created in the 90s, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, full title UN, United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. So that had a limited mandate. The mandate was supposed to expire some time ago, and it was taken over by something called the Mechanism for the for International Criminal Tribunals, later renamed as IRMCT, again for short, the Mechanism. So that is renewed year to year. But the problematic is right now that the Mechanism is paying for and presumably has jurisdiction over those persons who were tried before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and convicted or released, acquitted. So there are a number of people, I believe around 23 now, who are scattered in various countries in Africa, most, I think, in Niger, at least a large number, who have either been, who are either still serving the sentences imposed upon them by the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, or have been released having finished their sentences, or were acquitted. And the problem is that all of these people are effectively stateless, although they were, some of them have finished their sentences and some of them haven't been sentenced at all, they were acquitted. They essentially were stuck after being plucked out of the places where they were legitimate refugees, whether it be in Europe or the United States or somewhere else in Africa, and being imprisoned in Africa, awaiting trial and after being convicted, if those of them were convicted being sentenced and so on, they had nowhere to return to at the end of their, at the end of the trial if they were acquitted, or at the end of their sentences. In Canada, as I think we discussed last week, if you're accused of a criminal offense and you're acquitted of that criminal offense, theoretically, you're just part back a part of the community, even if you were held in jail for some time. And certainly when you finish your sentence, if you're sentenced, you return to the community. That doesn't happen before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, which made no accommodation for the fact that people would either be acquitted or would be released rather than spend the rest of their lives in jail. Yeah. There made no provision for that at all. So when the if the UN Security Council decides that the mechanism is finished or it's going to be diminished, the question is, who now has control over those people who were tried under a United Nations ad hoc criminal law regime and are still subject to that jurisdiction of that regime, just as in, you know, in Canada, yes. Prisoners are subject yes. to the courts here and the justice system here. Mm-hmm. So what happens to them? So what the proposal is, and the proposal being considered by the UN Security Council, is that the people who are currently imprisoned, and it's not clear to me, but some people seem to believe that this also applies to people who are acquitted, but are sort of living in what I would call a kind of house arrest in places like Niger in Africa, they would be transferred to the tender mercies of the Rwandan legal system. They would be placed in a jail in Rwanda.
Yes. And what is the problem with that? What is it about Rwanda?
Well, there's a host of problems there, not least that the reason they were tried in an international system based in Arusha, Tanzania, not based in Rwanda, is because this was intended to be an independent court, which was going to try people, not just one side. The yes. mandate was to try persons responsible for what was described in the title of proceedings for the genocide in Rwanda. The problematic is that didn't happen. It was just one side. It was an exercise in victor's justice because the conquering Rwandan Patriotic Front, having seized power in 1994, never faced any charges from the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda.
And they specifically withdrew or retreated from that concept under Louise Arbour and Carla Del Ponte, right? They made an agreement not to look into the RPF.
Well, Carla Del Ponte was originally the chief prosecutor for both the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda and for the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. But she did announce that she had indictments ready to go against members of the Rwandan Patriotic Front. And there was ample evidence in the trials before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda of criminal behavior, of massacres, and so on from the Rwandan Patriotic Front after it illegally invaded Rwanda with the assistance of the Ugandan army in 1990. But after Carla Del Ponte, I think we discussed this briefly last week, after Carla Del Ponte had announced that they had indictments ready to go against members of the Rwandan Patriotic Front, now the ruling party in the Rwandan one-party state, she was promptly fired from her position as chief prosecutor for the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and they created a separate chief prosecutor for each of the two tribunals. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, the idea of the ICTR, the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and its placement in Arusha instead of in Kigali, Rwanda, was that it was going to be a neutral body. The other problem is that the justice system in Rwanda is notoriously unfair. And
yes, we're going to, later on, we're going to read a letter from Paul Rusesabagina, who was... he got the whole experience from them, and he's a U.S. citizen, and that's the only thing that saved him. The courts don't work there.
So Rwanda, and Rwanda, of course, says, oh, we're willing to take the prisoners. We have the facilities, and we can give you guarantees. The problem is they've given guarantees in the past, and these guarantees have been notoriously unreliable. There was, for example, a deal they had with Israel to take refugees, African refugees who were in Israel, and they would give them refugee status in Israel. After taking them, they promptly repatriated them to the countries they had fled from. And in 2023, there was an attempt by the British government to enter into a similar deal with Rwanda to send people who were seeking refugee status and landed in Britain to Rwanda. And the British Supreme Court in 2023 said, no, no, you can't do that because you can't trust the Rwandan government. Not only can't you trust them with refugees, you can't trust them, period. Their justice system is unjust. It's a system of injustice and so on. We can go way back. There was a decision rendered by one of the appeal courts, in, again in Britain, in 2009, a case called Brown, where the British government wanted to transfer people from Britain to Rwanda to stand trial. There were people that the Rwandan government wanted to try for the events in 1994, and the court refused to do so, even after it was argued before the court that the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda had agreed in principle to transfer trials to Rwanda. That didn't wash with the British court. I just want to read what their judgment was.
Please do.
They said, we have reached a firm conclusion as to the gravity of the problems that would face these appellants as regards witnesses if they were returned for trial in Rwanda. Those very problems do not promise well for the judiciary's independence and impartiality. The general evidence as to the nature of the Rwandan polity offers no better promise. When one adds all the particular evidence we've described touching on the justice system, we're driven to conclude that if these appellants were returned, there would be a real risk that they would suffer a flagrant denial of justice. And there's no reason to think, that's the end of the quote, but there's no reason to think that anything different would happen today. The Rwandan government has, you will be reading the letter from Paul Rusesabagina, who was literally kidnapped on a flight to a third country and brought to Rwanda, held for months by the Rwandan government. By the way, as far as I know, although the Rwandan government was pressured and did release him to the United States, I think to the United States, he is still on record as a convicted terrorist in Rwanda. Paul Rusesabagina, the hero of the movie Hotel Rwanda. So it's a terrifying prospect. The other thing that the Rwandan government says they want is that they want the archives of the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. Again, this is
how could that be? The UN conducted it. It is UN's responsibility. How could they turn over their own work to a state entity when it's their work? It belongs. The charges were the initiative of the United Nations. So how could they give that to a state?
Well, that's...
Don't they own it?
Yes, but that's precisely the point. But it was a particular legal system and a particular form of justice, or some would say injustice, under which these people were tried. But it was a particular form. It was it was bound by all kinds of their own rules and regulations, statutes, case law, and so on. So... how that system then says, well, we're giving up as a system and we're going to throw you to the wolves in a country which doesn't recognize, respect that system, certainly doesn't respect the rule of law as would be understood in most places on the planet. How can they transfer people there? And how on earth could they transfer the archives there? I mean, transferring the archives brings with it a series of horrific problems, because the information in those archives,
some of that information might touch on their own crimes, and they will be able to look into the people who were looking into them.
Certainly, they would be. I don't know what's in the archives, but certainly more than you can find online. Much of what you find online from the cases is heavily redacted. Certainly, I would say the vast majority of witnesses, both for defense and prosecution, throughout all of the trials, were protected witnesses whose names and identities were supposed to be jealously guarded.
Hello? I think we lost David. Let me just say, right, while we may try to get, I think we'll take a shot at getting it back. I hope he'll announce his presence, but I'll just tell you, StandForOurParents.org is the body that is heading up the plea, and that today is, again, we're told, being told it is the deadline for a decision about what to do with the, I would say approximately, I'm going to take a guess, maybe 20, 25 individuals who appeared before the court at the in Arusha, and the UN created a problem where they're not able to find refuge anywhere except Rwanda says they want them. But Rwanda itself is a place where you don't, the courts don't function properly, and where they've kidnapped people like Paul Rusesabagina. I literally kidnapped him and took him to the country. The whole point of the UN tribunal was that it was going to be neutral, and it was going to be set up in Tanzania, and anybody convicted of crimes against humanity would have to answer to them. And that included the people who are currently running the government in Arusha. And I think, David, I'm sorry, we knocked you off the air. Are you back?
I think it was my end. I apologize for that.
Yes.
Yeah, we were talking
okay.
About if the Rwandan government gets its hand on the hands on the archives. Look, it was being investigated. It was people in Rwandan government were being investigated of all kinds of things, including the assassination of President Habyarimana.
Yes.
And the president of Burundi, which triggered the mass killings in 1994, but also the indictments which were prepared under the aegis of Carlo Del Ponte and so on. So there's a plethora of information in there, which would be, which the Rwandan government, which is repressive and vindictive kind of government, would love to get its hands on. It would include all kinds of information that's not public, names, places, and so on, people, people conducting investigations, who are potential witnesses but never became witnesses. They'd get a whole long list of people, and this is a government that doesn't brook criticism. People who criticize it or write critical things about Rwandan history are charged with genocide, minimization, and so on, and imprisoned wrongly. So there's no way that the British courts have said, both in 2009, 2020, and 2023, one cannot trust this is a fair legal system. Rwanda entered into something called the Washington Accord, where it agreed to move troops out of Eastern Congo.
Yes, by the way, I just want to just say clearly there that there's a war going on. Why would you transfer prisoners to a country that is at war? I mean, because clearly, by the way, war means war measures. That means you don't actually have civil rights, civil liberties, and particularly if you're already somebody they regard as a villain.
Yes, and there's a massive conflagration going on in the Congo with huge numbers of people being killed in massacres ascribed to the Rwandan government.
And there's an agreement that the aggressor is the current government of Rwanda that wants these prisoners.
There are accords where they've agreed to take their troops out of Eastern Congo, and they haven't complied with it. So under these circumstances, it would be a massive miscarriage of justice for the United Nations Security Council to simply, as it were, wash its hands and throw the prisoners and the archives into the hands of the Rwandan dictatorship.
Yes. Well, that's sobering. So tell us what people can do here.
Well, I think it's important to do or say something in public. There is a go-to organization and website. The website, which has up-to-date information, is run by an organization called Stand for Our Parents, which is run by the families of these people who are in peril at the moment. So people can easily get there, standforourparents.org, O-R-G. You can also find them on X, Twitter. All you'd have to do is write in Stand for Our Parents. I think there's a handle, hashtag Stand for the number four parents.
But you can also find that's on Twitter, right?
That's on Twitter, X. And they do have, you can find the kinds of documents, the legal documents there. They're quite comprehensive. They have the letters from the prisoners to the Security Council, letters from the from themselves to the Security Council. People have made public statements like, as you say, Paul Roussas-Abagina, that you're going to read from. I would urge people to get in touch with or Stand for Our Parents, or at least look at their website, and then you'd be able to see what needs to be done. Circulating the documents like the prisoner's letter or the Paul Roussas-Abagina letter, which you can, again, Google and find, I think would be immensely useful. The UN Security Council was supposed to have reached a conclusion on this and come out with a decision last week on the 25th. We then heard it was going to be on the 26th, and now we hear it's likely to be this afternoon. And the point is to bring home to the people at the UN Security Council that that this would be a massive injustice, would imperil the lives of the prisoners, the lives of their family members, and the lives of numerous people who are sometimes unwittingly in the archives of the of the ICTR.
Terrible. David, we really appreciate it, because this is the day, and let's hope that they find themselves in a quandary and push us back and listen to reason. And you've done everything you can, and I know that listeners will look to organizations like StandForParents.org and try to help them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.